So just tell me about the Montevideo, Uruguay connection. You were born there, you played youth soccer there. How much of that do you recollect, and how influential has that been in your life?
I remember everything. You know, I actually don't have a good memory, but that part of my life was so important to me because soccer was so important. So in Uruguay, I played what they call baby football, which is football between the ages of 6 and 12, and I pretty much played, you know, every age group in between there. And it's so important because, you know, if you think about the way sort of soccer operates in the U.S., where, you know, we talk about, you know, not being too competitive too early and being careful with being focused on results too early. You know, in Uruguay, you're literally playing derbies against a team across the road that you have to win already at 7 and 8 years old. I mean, these are games you have to win because the fields are packed with parents all the way around who want to win the game. So my recollection is how tough it was to play the games at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
Tab Ramos, new coach of the Houston Dynamo, joining us. So then your dad, former professional soccer player, how influential has he been with you when it comes to the sport of soccer? Because we know the influence of fathers.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was very much involved. You know, he was an electrical engineer, but at the same time, he was helping with the fourth division team at Huracan in Montevideo. So he was very involved in the game. He tried to teach me as much as he could, and he was obviously at all my games.
Kearney, New Jersey, that's where you end up landing, in a very good soccer area, as we all know. John Horks, you and John kind of tied at the hip?
Yeah, so I was very lucky to move, of all places in the country. I ended up moving to Harrison, Kearney area in the U.S., where there was a big influence of, you know, sort of immigrants who brought the game really early on to the U.S. So I got on Thistle FC in Kearney. John Harkes happened to be there. John's dad coached the team where I played. And John and I have been great friends ever since, and I think we've had sort of parallel careers. You know, he went to England, I went to Spain. We both played on the national team pretty much around the whole same time. And yeah, I mean, it's a great friend and a lot of respect for what he's given back to the game, and even more for the type of player that he was, because I think now that I've watched what's happened with U.S. soccer over the last, you know, 5, 8 years, I start to realize how good our teams earlier were.
Yeah, former U.S. international Tab Ramos joining us here, and of course we're going to intervene all the time and mention that because this is also having aired on the radio. St. Benedict's Precht obviously has a tremendous sort of reputation as a high school soccer place, so you get tied into them as well. I also found out you ran track.
Oh, well, I don't know how you found that out, but yes. St. Benedict's was a very important part of my life. You know, Father Edwin is the headmaster there still, and he was there when I was there. And he played a big role in me really being able to get all my papers done and everything to get on the national team quickly. It was a school that at the time had not won a state championship in decades, since they won in football, I think, in the 50s or 60s. And soccer kind of brought the school back. You know, it's in Newark. It's in a very difficult, you know, inner city, you know, part. And I think St. Benedict's, we kind of started to put it back on the map. And then when Claudio Reyna came along, he took it to the next level. You know, that's when St. Benedict's truly became a national power.
Talking to Tab Ramos here as we continue on, very excited that he's the new manager here in Houston, Texas. So what a lot of people don't know is you went to North Carolina State for 4 years and you played for the Wolfpack 4 years. You know, most people might think, hey, after 2 years you left. Talk about your college experience, because that's kind of a rarity, and then you going on to the career you had professionally.
Yeah, I mean, it's unusual now to hear of a player who plays in the World Cup who went to college for 4 years. That rarely happens. And I think in a way it's a good thing, because obviously that means that soccer is moving along and that the best players get signed earlier and are placed in better environments. I still feel lucky that I was able to play for George Tarantini at North Carolina State, and I was there 4 years, and that I was able to graduate, which is something that I know was really important to my parents. So yeah, my experience in college was was amazing. And, you know, sometimes when you grow up as an American in this country, you know, your 4 years in college seem like they never go away. You know, the contacts and the friends that you make and the things that you do while you're in college are things that you keep with you for the rest of your life.
George Tarantini, obviously, for those listening in, was the brother of Alberto Tarantini, who I believe won a World Cup with Argentina, played in England. What type of coach was he? And do you take anything from him now that you're in the coaching side of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's rare that I go through a full week without somehow thinking about something that George Tarantini said. And only because he was a very hard coach. He was a very hard coach. He was determined. He wanted the best for you, but he made you earn it every step of the way. And there's always sometimes when I coach, sometimes I say something that reminds me of the way he said it. So I think for all of us that played at North Carolina State, we always have that little piece of George with us.
I want to take you to the New York Cosmos, because everybody who's from New Jersey, myself included, we were influenced by the New York Cosmos, the crowds, the stars. What did the Cosmos mean to you growing up?
Well, I lived basically about, you know, 5-7 miles from Giant Stadium. And so we try to go. Obviously, my family couldn't afford to go to all the games. But every once in a while, my father would splurge and get us tickets, and we'd be in the upper deck somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, the stadium was mostly full. And it was a place where I feel like I always dreamed that I could play. So for me, it was really growing up close to the stadium, wishing that one day I'd be able to play there.
So hope and possibility when you went in that stadium was there, right?
For sure. I mean, I was a kid just like kids do now, you know, that kids that attend professional games now, you always want to, someday you want to put on that jersey and you want to represent your home club.
Talking to Tom Ramos here, Santiago Formoso is a Kearney guy. Do you remember him? Because, you know, he is from Spain originally, and of course you had the connection playing in Spain.
Of course, Santi was a superstar from our town at the time. You know, I think, if I remember correctly, I think he used to come into town driving a Corvette, you know, and we thought he was the man, you know, like one day we wanted to be like Santi. So I think he's still around the area. I haven't seen him in a couple of years now. But yeah, very important part of, you know, who we became afterwards.
Yeah, the Cosmos, something else there. Then you get into the ASL. You do your college. New Jersey Eagles, Miami Sharks, this is where it begins. And of course, what's interesting to me as I look at you, you really bridge where the game was then to where the game is now with MLS. So those experiences, what did they mean to you playing in leagues like the ASL?
Well, they mean that I'm really old. Is really what it means,
yeah.
First of all. But
we won't go there.
But yeah, but after that, I would have to say that it was a great time. It was a uncertain time because we felt like we were soccer players that kind of held like a we sort of carried our little suitcase in our portfolio with us, you know. And it was like, you know, this 3 months I'm going to play for this club, and then you'd pack your bag and you go play for another club, just trying to find your way.
Yeah.
You know, it was not easy back then. And it wasn't until the miracle of qualifying to the 1990 World Cup that we had an opportunity to finally leave and go play somewhere.
So talk about the national team and being under contract to U.S. soccer and maybe how different that is to what it is today. But you were obviously identified as one of the top U.S. players. You went to 3 World Cups. Talk about your times with U.S. soccer. As a player,
it was such great times to be part of the national team. You know, at the time we obviously didn't have the budget. You know, so it was difficult to even get into national games. But they signed us to contracts. I think our first contracts with U.S. Soccer might have been somewhere around $15,000 to $20,000 a year, and we did what we could. We were grateful that we had a contract at all, and we had somewhere to play. And U.S. Soccer did, at the time, the best it could, because I'm sure whatever they were paying us at the time, they didn't have. They had to go out and get it. So, but it was a great time to sort of, you know, bridge, you know, where we had been, which it was not qualifying for a World Cup for 40 years, to finally put us in the limelight of the world once again 40 years later.
We're talking to Tom Ramos. You know the goal that always stands out to me, and I'm wondering where this sits in your history of your goals that are most memorable. Was the one in Portland, Marcelo Balboa cut it back from the end line and you came running in and buried it. Is that one of the greatest goals in your mind as far as memories are concerned?
Well, even though
because it was an important goal too.
It was. So even though I have a bad memory, I didn't score many goals, so I can remember most of them. So that's a good thing. But that one was special because I was just coming back from a torn ACL, and that was my first game back, and I really wanted to contribute to the team somehow. And I started that game, and I think it was like somewhere around the, I think maybe the 70th minute or something like that. Yeah, I think Preki, you know, did his normal cut on the sideline, chopped a couple guys up and cut the ball across the box, and Marcelo laid it back to my right foot. And then, yeah, I scored a goal, and I think it was a big one because it put us in good position in the group to qualify to the World Cup.
Absolutely. It was World Cup qualifying against Costa Rica. Talking to Tab Ramos. U.S. soccer, your coaches, you had a couple of them. What was the takeaway from some of them when it comes to your management career now, you know, the Bob Ganslers and on?
I think you always take something from every coach that you have because they're all different. Everybody thinks of the game. We all think of the game differently. And I've been very fortunate that I've had some great coaches. You know, Bora Milutinovic, I feel like although he wasn't the best tactician, I feel like he was a very deep person, and so I learned a lot from that aspect, you know, the things to do off the field and you know, how important just life is in general. I think that was important to him to have a happy team. You know, Bob Gansler really is the one that put us on the map. You know, he's a hard coach. He wouldn't sometimes even allow you to be on the field if you weren't wearing studs. So you're talking about, you know, this is the old way of doing things. But I think, you know, I think you learn from everybody. Steve Sampson was our first, I feel, very American coach that we had. So he had that attitude about him. And then came Bruce Arena. So those are the coaches that I had on the national team that I think I learned. You know, Bruce was very confident and managed the team a certain way where he allowed you to be as professional as you wanted to be. So there was always something to learn.
Wasn't that the greatest thing that Bruce brought? Was a level of, I always thought he brought a level of confidence that we never had had.
Yeah, no, really nothing gets to Bruce, you know. So, yeah, he brought something different. You know, it seemed like, to that point, every coach we had, it seemed like they were somehow always under the gun, you know, in a hurry. And we, you know, and Bruce was always very relaxed, and he was always more about the players and the players feeling comfortable in the environment. And I think that got the most out of players.
Talking to Tab Ramos, where do you find that balance? You know, the balance of pushing people, the balance of easing off. Is that something every manager kind of figures out on their own based on the identity of their group?
And I think that's exactly right. I think the identity of the group is something you always have to consider because I don't think you could ever go to a place and say, well, we're going to do things only my way. Because your ways have to adapt to the type of people you're surrounded by, and they have to adapt to the players that you have. The personalities on players are always different. So if I had to tell you now, you know, as a blank statement, you know, in general for me, it's really important that the players are really happy off the field, that the club feels like a family, that we have a culture of being inclusive, not just between all of the staff, but the academy, like the door is always open. We're one club. And then the moment we step on the field, I want the players to give everything. So, you know, the training sessions won't be very long. They will be shorter, but to the point. And I want the players to always want to win when they're on the field, to do everything to win. So, and that's in practice and in the games. I feel like if you don't practice to win, it's difficult to just turn it on the weekend. So, but again, it all depends on the identity of the players that you have. I just really like being here in Houston because I think we have, on the team, we have good people. Okay, so we have good players, but I think we also have good people. And I think they're ready to give everything to win.
Tab Ramos joining us. Figueres, second division in Spain. So this is a big move for you. You're going to a soccer-playing country, a soccer-playing nation that has depth. And you're coached by Tito Villanova, who goes on to be the Barcelona coach, which I didn't even know this. But tell
me about
these experiences.
So around World Cup time, you know, I was starting to get offers. We were playing international teams. Obviously, being part of the national team, being in the World Cup, you start to get offers. And I remember, you know, after the World Cup ended, I had sort of a choice to make. I had an offer from Roda in Holland that was first division. And I had Figueres, which was a small club in Spain, second division. And I ended up choosing going to Spain because I felt like down the road I wanted to be in Spain anyway. I thought that was the right type of football for me. And I got very lucky, actually, because I ended up going to Spain. And, you know, I played right midfield, right next to where Tito Villanova played. He was the midfielder right next to me. And we sort of started every game together for the next 2 years until he was sold to Celta Vigo, I believe, and I was sold to Betis. So we spent two full years together. He was a wonderful person and someone that you could tell was going to be a coach somewhere down the line.
You could tell? What were some of the things, just by the way he played the game, the analytical side of it?
Yeah, he played, you know, and I'm sure all of us that are involved in the game, we've played with those type of guys that play that central midfielder role that you can tell they run the show. You know, they're always giving directions, they're always helping everyone out, and he was definitely one of those
now
guys.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Tab, but you guys got promoted. You helped Betis get promoted, right, to La Liga?
Yes.
But you never got to play in La Liga because of the injury in the World Cup. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that was a really difficult time for me because I felt like I had spent already 3.5 years in Spain, almost 4 years working really hard to get back to La Liga. You know, I paid my dues at a smaller club. We were only really 2 points away from going to La Liga with the smaller club, which was really difficult. And then I got transferred to Betis in a year when they dropped because they wanted to go back up. And I had been on second division's best 11 2 years in a row, so they wanted to build a really good team to go up. And so we finally went up with Betis. And when we went up with Betis, I had the injury at the World Cup, the elbow injury that cracked my skull. And then I was out for 6 months, so Betis didn't put me on the 22-man list because I was going to miss the next 4 months of La Liga anyway. By that time, I started to lose my position, and I felt I had a conversation with Lorenzo Serra Ferrer, who was the coach, and I said to him, "Well, you know, what's the chances of me getting back on the team?" And he said, "Well, look, I mean, I want you on the team. But to be fair, Stosic will be in your position. He's our starter and, you know, you can be on the bench." And at the time I was 26, 27, around that age. I felt like I was at my prime and I felt like I wanted to go somewhere and play. And I had the opportunity to be transferred to Tigres, and that's where I went.
So how are you going to make those Rayados fans in Houston like you since you played for Tigres?
The only thing I can say is, that my time in Monterrey was amazing.
Great city, huh?
And that has to do with the fact that, you know, the city of Monterrey is very much divided into Tigres and Rayados, and it's a very tough place to be when you're at the stadium. But I can tell you that it's the nicest people in the world to be around, because Monterrey was a beautiful city to live in, and all the people there were great, regardless of what team they represented. I have to tell you that everybody off the field was wonderful to me always.
Yeah, would you think of possibilities, and we're talking to Tab Ramos, because we know every weekend they play. People drive back to Monterrey to see Tigres playing Rayados, these amazing stadiums that they're in. Maybe it's the capital of soccer in this region of the world, that city. Could there be possibilities with the Dynamo and those teams down the road?
I hope
so.
Just
in general.
I hope so, because I know what people in Monterrey think of Houston, and I know how important Houston is to the people in Monterrey, because I've been there and I've lived it. I would like to have a better relationship with the clubs down there. I think that's important, and my son is born in Monterrey, so I feel like I will always have part of Monterrey with me.
Speaking of Tab Ramos, all right, 95, MLS is starting. In 96, the first guy signed by the league is the one and only Tab Ramos of the Metro Stars. Do you remember the night, I think you went down to the Palladium to unveil the new jerseys?
I do.
In New York City.
And I've seen that picture so many times.
How about those jerseys? Those were the best.
It was, you know, the funny part is we all went in the back to change and put on our jerseys. And I had already seen the Metro Stars jersey because I had to do some pictures. And my first pictures with a Metro Stars jersey in MLS were actually at El Volcan in Monterrey, because I was going to leave after the season to go play, and I took my first picture. So if you can see my first pictures with those jerseys are actually at Tigres, which was...
So Metro Stars and Tigres MLS forever linked.
That's right. So the first MLS pictures were actually taken in El Volcan, which was so awesome. And then we showed up at the in New York, as you said, at the Palladium for the pictures. And then that's the first time I get an opportunity to see all the other jerseys. And then you see, like, it's a mess of colors, and you know, it was crazy, but it was exciting, you know. And I was you know, happy to be part of the beginning of something that, you know, look where we are today. You know, sitting here at Houston's beautiful training facility, and none of this would have happened if we didn't start at some point. So.
Talking to Todd Ramos, by the way, not everybody gets to be the first guy ever signed by a pro league, so think about that for a second.
Yeah, it was unusual, actually, because, you know, when I got signed by MLS, they didn't even have names of teams. Mm-hmm. So I signed and I said, well, you know, I'm from New Jersey. Can I be in my local team? And they said, well, you have to choose two. We're not sure if we can give you that one, but one of two. And I said, okay, well, can I be in New Jersey or in D.C.? You know, my wife was from D.C. and I thought, well, maybe this is... I'd like to stay on the East Coast. So I said, okay. And then I ended up, you know, at Metro Star, so that was great.
Speaking of Todd Ramos, how about your years under Jurgen as an assistant? Because Jurgen, you know, had this little shaman-like quality to him, to the public, very different. What were the takeaways from Jurgen Klinsmann, who, like you, was such an outstanding soccer player?
I learned so much from Jurgen. And by the way, when our national team had Jurgen, it seemed like we were this huge operation that traveled around the world, and where doors were open to us everywhere because of Jurgen. Wow. I feel like he was an amazing manager. And for me, a lot of, you know, I've learned a lot from the way he managed the operation that it is to actually run a team, not just the actual tactics on the field.
So I look at you, Tab, and I say, wow, here's a guy that checks all the boxes. This is the kind of guy that MLS should be hiring. You've done it at the youth level all the way up. Is that a prerequisite in your mind? I know it doesn't always work like that for every coach, but the amount of differing experiences at differing levels that you have had has just amassed this incredible book of experience.
I think ideally you always want to have people on your books that have the most experience possible. I think that's a great thing. But I also think that the league has been evolving. And maybe MLS is at the point now where the, you know, former player graduating directly into the bench of an MLS team, I think those days are ending slowly. But I think they were necessary to get the league to where it is today. I think it's pretty clear that moving forward, the league wants coaches on the sideline who are educated in coaching rather than just having been a player.
Omid Namazi, he's basically your right-hand man. We call him your right-hand man because we know he's a talented coach. I don't know him personally, but I've been told by a lot of people he's a very talented coach.
For sure, you would call him my right-hand man, and with all the respect to Pablo, because Pablo has been obviously so huge.
By the way, you remind me, he went to North Carolina State also.
That's right. And so, so we're fellow Wolfpack. Omid has so much experience. He's coaching the U.S. at every single level of the game. He's coaching every league. And for me, the right person to always bounce ideas off. And the one person that's always going to tell me, no, let's not do that. Let's do something else. And that really pushes the limits for me. So I think he's the perfect right-hand man.
Speaking of Todd Ramos, last question. We really thank you for all your time here. I think the fans are really going to appreciate the insight from you in this interview. What will the Dynamo team, in your vision, look like in 2020 when it's playing?
Right. So I think as a coach, you always have the idea, because it's easy to sit in the office and put the team together and say, hey, we're going to play this way and it's going to look this way. And then comes the reality of actually playing the games, because now you have to see how it develops. You have to see how players react to the way you want to play and what players fit into the way you want to play and which ones end up not fitting into the way you want to play. So I think it's a process. But if I had a guess going into the summer, what I'd like to see is a happy team on the field that's always attacking, a team that's not afraid to go forward, a team that's not afraid after it scores a goal to only worry about scoring another one rather than defending the one you have. having said that, as I've done in my past coaching, sometimes, you know, it's 5-10 minutes left in the game and you have to shut it down because you have to get a result. There'd be times where we have to shut it down and get a result because that's just the way, you know, this is about winning games. But I'm hoping that the players are happy playing in a style which will allow them to be free.
Tab, we thank you. We welcome you to Houston. It's good to have a little more New Jersey down here as well. And thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, thank you.